With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, time is of the essence when identifying and resolving issues in your software. And our friends at Raygun are here to help. Their brand new alerting feature is now available for crash reporting and real user monitoring to make sure you're quickly notified of the errors, crashes, and front-end performance issues that matter most to you and your business. Set thresholds for your alert based on an increase in error count, a spike in load time, or new issues introduced in the latest deployment, along with custom filters that give you even greater control. Assign multiple users to ensure the right team members are notified, with alerts linked directly to the issue in Raygun, taking you to the root cause faster. Never miss another mission-critical issue in your software again. Try Raygun Alerting today and create a world-class issue resolution workflow that gives you and your customers peace of mind. Visit Raygun.com to learn more. Their simple usage-based plans start from as little as $4 per month with unlimited apps and users. That's Raygun.com to start your free 14-day trial.
Welcome back to .NET Rocks. This is Carl Franklin.
And this is Richard Campbell.
How long have we been doing this stupid show?
you've been doing it for almost 20 years.
You're pretty close.
I'm the new guy. I only got
only
in
19
here.
Only 19 years.
Yeah, 2005, so 17 years.
Okay.
But it was February of 2005 was episode 100.
Yeah, that's right. That was a fun episode.
Yeah, it's the odd shows are fun until you have to do 18 of them.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a little trickier.
And we're just like,
what do you want to do this time? I don't know.
Just a milestone. What is it? It's no big deal.
Well, we're staring another one in the face, right? We're 15 episodes away from episode 1800. So
we are. And, we're feeling like we want to get out there and meet our fans again have a party, and we'll do that. But part of engaging with our fans is exactly what Better Know Framework is about.
Well, so then play that funky music.
White the boys.
All right, man, what do you got?
So Richard and I both are announcing right here, right now, that we're going to start using a live platform to record some of our podcasts. And it's called Bullhorn. And we've got an account, a page where you can go and subscribe to us on Bullhorn. Go to bullhorn.fm/.netrocks, dotnetrocks. Or, you know, if you want to use the PWOP me shortcut, 1785.pwop.me. But anyway, Bullhorn FM is this cool platform where you can log in with your phone and you can listen live on your phone. You can ask questions live on your phone, you know, with text.
Mm-hmm.
We could have callers if we wanted to, but we're not sure about that yet. But we certainly have a chat room, and you can ask questions, and we can field those questions, and the guests can see the questions, and we're going to have some polls and interactive stuff like that. It's going to be a whole lot of fun, right, Richard?
Yeah, it's going to take some experimentation for us to figure it out. It's new for us, too. But, you know what? We got a bunch of geeky folks working on this. So, The audience being part of that, we'll figure out what it could do for us and when it makes sense. I'm very excited about the question part.
You know, yeah.
The idea that sometimes you miss a question ourselves. And so the chance to get that idea into the guest, make a better show, that's really exciting for me.
Yeah, and this is a harkening back to what we used to do with Diamond
Rocks.
Used to do live, broadcasts while we recorded, and we had an IRC channel. All the kids are going, "What the heck is that?" And it's old school chat room, right? Yeah. And
it's like Snapchat, only different,
right? And you know, it was hard with just a free for all kind of chat room because you pay attention to that, and then you're listening and you're paying attention, and it's sort of, but Bullhorn is cool because questions are succinct, like they're explicit. You have the chatter, which we don't really pay attention to, but if somebody wants to ask a question, it's like a different button. Boom. Yeah.
It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. So that's what you got.
That's what I got. That's what we both got. So who's talking to us today, Richard?
Hey, I grabbed a comment off of show 1781, which we just put out. Part of our series of the 20th anniversary of .NET, which I think we did a pretty good job of. That was the show we did with Mark Miller, our friend, and was a riotous fun.
Oh, it was great.
S. Cruz said, "I was reminiscing with my brother the other day about Windows Phone and its beautiful hardware and operating system. I think it was Wozniak who said Windows Phone felt like a friend, and he was right. The problem with the OS was that friends are built over time. That isn't well represented in the spur of moment sales opportunity."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, there's a long story about how sales went wrong for Windows Phone. It's a complicated story.
Yeah, it's true.
And so much of Microsoft's ambition has been built to build things that require investment on the part of the user to really pay off. And it's unfortunate a lot of their tech has been overlooked as a result because of it. I think this was the case with Windows Phone. We're still ahead of its competition. Well, I agree with that I think it was still ahead of its competition. And arguably today it would be more interesting.
Yeah. But
they're not going to chase markets now. And
it's true. And it was interesting, you know, getting Mark Miller hates the all multicolored tiles and stuff because, you know, when it is a sort of a scatter technology, right? You have to sort of search for what you want. But in traditional UI for applications, that's, you know, contrast and color are convey information, whereas on that Windows Phone, they didn't. They were just...
Yeah, but they consolidated contacts. They, you know, there were things that were really great about Windows Phone.
And that's what I loved.
Yeah. I never had a problem with the color. I understand why Mark would, but we still... a unique device, and you know, I still got my old 950 sitting over there. I think it's
I got mine too, man.
Yeah. So S. Cruz, thank you so much for your comment. A copy of Music to Go By is on its way to you. And if you'd like a copy of Music to Go By, write a comment on the website at .netrocks.com or on the Facebooks. We publish every show there. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, we'll send you a copy of Music to Go By.
And definitely follow us on Twitter. I'm at Carl Franklin. He's at Rich Campbell. Send us a tweet. Definitely notch up the contrast or we might miss it.
High contrast tweets.
Somewhere somebody's going, "What? What? I missed what? Where do I set that?"
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very happy to introduce Dan Walmsley to the show to talk about Abilonia. Dan has been a .NET developer for over 15 years, as of this recording anyway. He specializes in cross-platform UI technology and has been developing and maintaining the .NET cross-platform UI framework Abilonia for over 8 years.
Man.
Welcome, Dan.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. What was it like playing in Prince's band? I'm just kidding.
Was that Abilonia?
Oh my God. Yeah, totally different reference.
8 years is hard to – first time on the show, so A, sorry. We probably should have had you on before this.
Yeah.
But also, why suddenly client technology is very hot.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody's talking about and concerned about front end clients. Are you having that experience too, Dan?
Yeah. In the last 18 months has been a huge explosion. And well, when we were really first getting going, there was very little in .NET for cross-platform UI.
Sure. Mm.
Xamarin was around, which is a great framework for mobile, and we wanted something for desktop. There was very little to go with back then, 8 years ago.
Yeah, you know, before Microsoft really got the whole cross-platform thing, and
So right off the bat, I want to just disambiguate between Abilonia and some other frameworks. For one, your XAML is not built on UWP or WPF, right? It's its own flavor of XAML that goes everywhere.
Yeah, it is its own flavor. Avalonia, it's very much like a cousin to WPF. So quite a lot of it is compatible and very, very similar to WPF. But we early on, we took a design decision to basically say, hey, if we were actually developing WPF today, but we were actually developing it as cross-platform rather than a Windows technology, what would we do differently? And that's mainly where we've made changes.
So why not base it on UWP like some of these other frameworks have?
Primarily we wanted to have the flexibility of to make the API decoupled from Windows. So yeah, there's certain concepts that apply to Windows that are difficult to apply on maybe Linux or Mac, and you can try a different abstraction that gives you something that's functional and more easier to work with on all the different operating systems.
Yeah. And those operating systems are?
On desktop, Windows, Linux, and Mac. And on Linux, there's like, you know, a million different flavors of Linux,
yeah.
Which is pretty challenging. But over the 8 years that we've been working on this, we've learned a lot. And from that, I think that we probably support the widest range of Linux distributions. There's not been one that we haven't been able to get it to run on so far.
Wow. And is it really different distros or is it the different GUIs, right? Like, I've got to think for you, implementation against KDE and GNOME and what is it? Cinnamon Budgie? Like, pick a word. There's probably a GUI from Linux for it.
But also IoT devices, right?
Yeah. A lot of people are picking up Avalonia for kind of really low-level embedded devices because it can actually work without a window manager at all. It can just render to frame buffer. So people are using Raspberry Pis and some things that are even lower powered than Raspberry Pis, and they're able to get fairly good results from it.
And then, of course, iOS and Android, the two biggie mobile things.
Yeah, yeah. We have iOS and Android. They're kind of more at a beta stage. In a few months, we're planning to release our 11.0, which will be like our first major production-ready release. And we're hoping to finally have iOS and Android fully ready for that.
When you're working with iOS and Android, do you find that it's really difficult because of the way that the totally different way that some of these services are implemented on the platform? Like, for example, notifications. Completely different on iOS and Android, requiring, you know, different accounts and different services that need to be set up behind the scenes. Are you falling into that category of problem? Are your problems into that category?
Well, on Avalonia, we mainly cover the UI part. So people can still use like the Xamarin APIs for all the kind of notifications and integration with the operating system.
Well, that's interesting. Wow. So Xamarin Forms is kind of evolving into MAUI. Will you be able to use the MAUI, you know, below the UI, the MAUI libraries as well?
It's hard to say because I haven't had a chance to fully look at what they're doing there. But the low level non UI APIs, I guess, the APIs that deal with the actual platform, they can be used alongside Avalonia. So you can,
right?
I guess the way you can describe it is that Avalonia is best suited when you've got primarily a desktop application,
sure,
and you want to take that to mobile. Right. So you can then share UI that adapts to mobile without fully rewriting your UI. You don't have to write separate views for that. Whereas I guess Xamarin, that was like mobile first, and Maui's kind of taking that to desktop. So it's like we're both going in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You're kind of coming desktop down to mobile, and they're doing mobile trying to scale up the desktop.
Yeah.
So you would say most of your users are doing desktop applications then?
Yeah, right now, most the bulk is desktop applications. We recently released like a first beta of WASM to support the browser, which I initially thought that, oh, people wouldn't touch it because it was kind of a bit rough around the edges. And immediately everybody is like doing demos on it and stuff. And it's been pretty crazy.
Nice. And but they're still, are they still coding in JavaScript and then just calling into the Avalon UI through WASM?
Well, you can include JavaScript in your application, but you can, if you want, you can do everything in C Sharp and XAML. Right. Or even just C Sharp. You don't have to use the XAML part, but
okay. Or C Sharp and Avalonia.
Basically, yeah.
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 And I also think you guys have got a real strong presence in Unity, which I think is unique amongst the UI spaces. Like I've seen a bunch of folks talking about using Avalonia in Unity.
Yeah. Well, I've seen quite a few people have been using it in like game engines. Mm-hmm. I've seen some demos of people who have integrated it into Unreal Engine. I'm not a gamer myself, so I don't fully understand the use cases there. But right. I guess in a lot of games, you have user interfaces and
yes, a settings dialogue, you know, setup stuff, like that kind of thing. I think where you need some forms over data kind of representations, and then it's you've got to solve that somehow. And it seems like Avalonia might be a solution to that. I haven't done it, but you know, wherever C Sharp goes, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a case where you build something and then other people take it and they start using it for something that you didn't even know existed, you know?
And of course, all open source. You got plugins for Visual Studio, plugins for Rider, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, JetBrains, they use Avalonia in some of their products now.
Nice.
And basically, because they're developers, they wanted to use their own IDEs and tools, but they wanted to get the best quality experience. They pretty much built Avalonia baked into Rider. There's a plugin to get the preview apart, but all the XAML and refactoring and IntelliSense, they built, baked it straight in. And that was mainly because they needed it for themselves, but obviously it's been really great for anybody that wants to use Avalonia and to use their products.
One thing that I'm trying to figure out from the context of what you're talking about is, are you using any version of .NET that is required for the app, .NET framework or .NET Core, .NET 5, .NET 6? Are there limitations there?
Well, when we first started, it was like mono and full traditional .NET, I guess you can call it now. Right. So basically, we still run on those, but now with .NET Core, .NET 5, .NET 6, obviously we support the latest ones as well. So I think any flavor of .NET we run on.
That's really, really good to hear.
Yeah, and interesting to come from mono, like in the Linux world viewpoint on this, you know, just gives a different flavor. Like you're very tolerant to multiple ways to render things. You said, like going down to Raspberry Pi level, that you can render without a window? Like, talk about how this works on Raspberry Pi on really lightweight hardware.
Sure. So basically, you can get like an absolute minimal Linux distribution where pretty much absolutely everything is stripped out. And it basically gives you like a handle, I guess, to a frame buffer. And that gets passed to Avalonia, and it literally just takes over the raw pixels on the screen. It just literally just writes straight to the directly to the screen.
But you're still writing XAML to do that.
Oh yeah, the developer experience that for you to develop the application to run there is no different. So you can run the application on your desktop in a window. then deploy it onto Raspberry Pi or some, yeah, and it will just do the right thing. It will just run in the frame buffer.
How cross-platform is this? Like, if I've made a Windows version in Avalonia and I go run it on the Pi, are there just pieces that won't render, or, you know, with the limitations of Pi, is it just a size thing?
So all of the controls and that are in Avalonia, they're all fully Avalonia fully renders its own controls.
Right.
So once a control runs on Avalonia on desktop, it will run everywhere that Avalonia
can all the run. Way down to that to the lightest gear. It might not be fast, depending on the control. But, you know, and there's not all Pis are made equal either, right?
Like, no, sure. And because more and more people have been trying it out, that's pushed us to do more and more optimization. So
right,
it gets faster all the time.
Yeah, no, if you can make it run on a Pi, it'll be smoking on a, you know, 8-core Xenon.
So, by the way, Dan, you might want to remove the pork chop that's hanging on your door because the dogs are coming for it.
Yeah. Sorry, there's a lot of dogs around in where I live.
That's all right. Well, that's what makes live podcast recording charming, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's just the cascade of barks. My old dog's here behind me, but he's not going to make too much noise. He's pretty quiet. I'm fascinated just because, you know, you would think coming from the desktop level, you would be pretty heavy, but I think it's that Linux flavor of you just don't know what Linux is going to be running on. So you stay very light. And so it serves all these different platforms well. I now am pretty excited to see what you can do in iOS and Android, because it seems like it's hard to come from desktop down to mobile. But if you can run on Pi, heck, Android's got all the muscle in the world.
Well, the big problem for me isn't running on all these platforms. It's because, you know, let's face it, HTML is cross-platform. But it's the integration with the services on the hardware that's where you have to drop down, right, to the individual platforms. As I was talking about, notifications is a particularly hard one because it requires different accounts and different services to be called and maintained on all these different platforms. So that to me is where the real cross-platform problems begin. But that's, as you said, not your concern, because as long as you're giving developers access to that lower level, you know, now they have to fill in the blanks. And it's just the nature of the beast that you have to do these, you know, under the UI things cross-platform because of the nature of the device.
Sure. And even on desktop, people still have access to the native APIs, you know, so you can add customization specifically for Windows or specifically for Mac. Right. Same with mobile. You can go right down to the native APIs if you need to.
Sure.
So stuff like like GPS and cameras and things like that exist consistently on phones, you're not going to have any problem accessing any of that.
I don't think so. Because the way it will work on mobile is that the APIs for all those kind of services that you get on the phone, other people and other libraries, they've already solved that problem. So in our case, we probably rely on Xamarin. The thing that Avalonia really gives you is the way that the controls and the UI are drawn will work without modification across all of the platforms.
Mm. Right. Yeah, it's always a question when you build these clients of how much client code is common between all the platforms, and how much is if Raspberry Pi, if Android. Like, I don't know if you have any sense of that.
Yeah, sure. So, I can give you an example. There's have you heard of Plastic SCM? They are like a source control manager.
I know the name, but this is version control system.
Yeah, they're like a source control management system, a bit like Git. The company is like a subsidiary of Unity.
Right.
And they, they have ported their product to Avalonia. So
interesting.
Before they had like a team specifically to do the UI on Mac, another team to do the UI on Linux, and another team to do the UI on Windows. And when they came to us, they were kind of saying, oh, you know, like they want to add a feature, but we got to do the feature three times and then find out that it can't be done on one of the platforms. And it's taken them a year to move over to Avalonia, but now they have all their code is 100% shared between the three platforms.
Yeah.
The UI code, and they've been able to unify their team, and now they're just working on adding new features, and it's really.
Well, and what a money saver, right? Like that's a lot of people.
Yeah. Time, money.
Yeah. All that debugging, you know, angry customers because the features aren't identical between devices. You know, the guy with the eye, you know, the guy on the Linux desktop does it and works that way. And then, yeah, in the Windows, it's like, this isn't the same. Like, it's really interesting to get into that battle. And, you know, anybody we've ever talked to who is doing native development across multiple mobile devices, same problem. It's like, how do I sync these versions between iPhone and Android?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, I think you're taking a serious problem off the table by having this unified development experience.
Well, we'll pause for this very important message and we'll be right back.
Hey, Carl.
Yeah.
Today's sponsor is Raygun, and we had the good fortune to have JD Trask on the line with us today.
Imagine that. Hey, JD.
Howdy, guys.
I'm going to put on my enterprise hat today, JD, and ask you a bit about why folks should be logging. Like, what's important about logging a website or an app server?
Well, the first thing is actually to have the data to understand the extent of any issues. So an extremely common thing we see, particularly from mature sort of customers with later stage products, is that they think there can't be that many issues because I haven't heard much from my customers about them. And what we've found is that typically less than 1% of users will ever actively tell you there's a problem. And so a common scenario is you start doing this and you go, oh my goodness, the whole house is on fire. I didn't even know.
And nobody was telling you.
Yeah.
And that honestly, in my view, that is the beginning of getting value out of tools like Raygun. It's just at least understand the facts of where you are so then you can improve over time.
Yeah. Gee, our traffic is really low. I wonder why. It's amazing that they don't come back and tell you that they didn't have a good experience. They just go away.
Well, that's right. I mean, we have so much choice today in the world. It is so easy to jump away. I remember reading an e-commerce book in the late 90s, and obviously I didn't pay enough attention or I would be the founder of Amazon. But the point was, you know, everything is just one click away. You don't even have to walk to the next shop, right? You can just do a search. There's the answer. There's the alternative. We have to compete on quality.
Yeah, my screen's big enough. I'm already searching on the other site while your site's still running.
That's right.
Well, thanks for making Raygun. We use it at .NET Rocks. And if you want more information on Raygun, just go to raygun.com and check it out.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, it's Carl Franklin. That's my friend Richard Campbell over there.
Howdy.
And we're talking to Dan Walmsley about Avalonia. And one of my questions is, I'm looking through the documentation. I noticed that you're taking a dependency on reactive UI to do change notifications.
Yeah, we have support for reactive UI. It's up. You don't have to use it, and it's not in the core part of the framework. The reason why we have a reactive UI package is because most of the XAML applications, you typically want an MVVM framework to get started quickly. And with reactive UI, it kind of gets you started a lot quicker out of the box just because it comes with like the templates that we have. You start a new project, it adds the reference to avalonia.reactiveui, and then you can quickly just add commands and properties.
And your view model inherits from reactive object, and then you can just handle the set, call raise and set if changed. Yeah.
So but of course, you can use any MVVM framework of your choosing.
It's, but you just like, you like it because it's done, it works, and why not?
Sure. Yeah. And sometimes it can be a little bit heavy and some of the advanced features. But when you stick with like the commands and the property notifications, it's pretty convenient. So some of us have been trying out the new Windows Community Toolkit recently. They got source generated properties now, and that works with Avalonia as well, and that's really cool.
So first of all, I really like the fact that you sort of took WPF as your default template rather than, you know, Xamarin Forms or UWP for XAML. But one thing that drives me absolutely crazy about WPF is binding.
Sure.
So how do you guys approach binding, and have you simplified the language in any way? Or is it still just complex by the nature of being XAML?
Sure. Well, when we actually started Avalonia, we didn't have XAML at all.
Right.
It was the guy that actually opened the first commits on the repo isn't a fan of XAML, and he originally thought that it would end up being like code only, just to declare UI in code. Mm-hmm. But obviously, a lot of people like XAML, so people. In the end, we built like a XAML compiler. So yeah, it works the same as WPF, but the bindings are compiled. So it can use reflection, but we built in support to compile the bindings to give you good performance. It means that at build time, you get to find out that, oh, the property doesn't exist, or the type is wrong, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that catches a lot of the problems with WPF.
Less surprises. You know the problems in advance, so you can get on it.
Yeah. Sometimes with WPF, I remember that the problems were that you wouldn't find out about it until runtime, and then you might get some log messages about, oh, this property was missing, or it didn't find it. But with compiled bindings in Avalonia, that problem goes away.
That's good. Also, just the complexity of paths and the whole language of binding. Once you use those curly braces within curly braces within curly braces, it's really mind numbing. And that's one of the reasons that I don't like it.
How many controls have you guys got? 40?
It could be. I don't know the count. You know, we got all the standard controls, buttons, text boxes, sliders, progress bars, data
and
grid.
And you can make your own if you're that enthusiastic, right?
Yeah, basically. It's pretty easy to make your own. And in fact, if you need a control, many people, you'll find a control for WPF. If it's not like a data grid or something like that, it's not going to take you very long to modify it to work on Avalonia.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So you could just adapt it and get to a point where it'll render properly with Avalonia.
Yeah. Most controls, it doesn't take much effort to. It's pretty much just renaming a few things.
Right.
Namespaces.
Matching the various versions of XAML, right? That whole, I don't know, we named that differently. Thanks. Okay.
There was some attempt maybe a couple of years ago for a XAML standard.
Yes, I remember that. That went well, didn't it?
Those were the days.
Well, and I wonder now that, with Microsoft coming together, to me, MAUI looks like XAML standard for Microsoft.
Well, it's Xamarin Forms XAML.
Yeah, really. or going into the Xamarin Forms flavor. So maybe that's an opportunity to say, okay, this is effectively the standard. For that working.
Yeah.
How do you guys make money Like, I appreciate it's all open source and downloadable. It doesn't look like there's a commercial version. Like, how you've been around for 8 years. You must be able to live.
Yeah, well, the first, I guess, 6 years, we were doing this all out of our own, just voluntary.
Wow.
It started off as just like a, you know, a project. And, you know, it's like you start swimming across the sea, you know. You've got so far.
As you do.
Know, you can't go back, you know. So,
yeah.
but eventually as demand grew, companies started wanting to use it. They were asking for support. The kind of main three developers, we set up a small startup company. It's pretty much been going for 2 years now.
Oh, good.
But people have been able to buy support from us.
Right.
And they've paid us to consult, give them consulting and porting applications. And that's pretty much, it's paid the bills just about.
Right.
Good.
It's kept us going.
Yeah, but it's so very much the traditional open source. Hey, the product's free. The support costs money.
Sure. Yeah,
and that's great. You know, as long as you have enough folks so they're on board that you can keep fed, you can keep working away on it and don't get into too crazy a schism around, you know, do I spend time on features? Do I spend time on support? Like, that's always a battle.
Yeah, it's a huge battle for us. And we actually have like a really quite a big community. So when you go into, we got, chat rooms on Discord, Gitter, and Telegram. When you go on there, there's usually, depending on which time of day you're there, there's up to about 100 people online at any one time. And you can usually, if you don't have the need to pay for support, you can get answers pretty quickly. There's a lot of people now, they've got a lot of knowledge and they sit around answering people's questions. So
nice. So community support too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can get a long way without paying any money, but then the bigger companies, they tend to have bigger demands and they want more security that they can get help as soon as possible. So that's usually when the company comes in.
Now, I've worn the enterprise architect hat enough to know, no, we need to pay somebody whose throat we can choke when there's a problem. You know, but that's really not an unreasonable standard to just go, it can't just be that there's nobody.
We
have a commitment.
Back in the early days, Richard, remember when, you know, Linux was a dirty word to Microsoft and open source was like, we used to joke that, you know, well, we can call support, but it has to be after 3 because that's when he comes home from school. Yeah, so I mean, you know, it wasn't as professional a deal as it is now. Hey, you said that the iOS and Android support is kind of in beta, and I'm wondering what that looks like in terms of a roadmap, and do you have a big demand for those platforms? Like, where is it right now and where's it going?
Yeah, so at the moment, it's difficult to promise any release dates, but we are aiming for, I think it will be like May time, end of May. That will be when we've first launched what we would consider stable support for mobile. It basically works right now. The main thing is integration with like text input. So that's what we're busy working on now, making sure it works properly with the keyboard. And,
I imagine you got a device regression challenge too. Like, does it work with everything?
I think with iOS, it certainly will do. Android, there's so many different devices. Time will tell.
Is there a beta version we can try right now if we want to?
By the time the episode goes out, yes.
Good. Okay. And so this is coming out on St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah, there you go.
March 17th. So where we go? Just avalonia.io? AvaloniaUI.net?
AvaloniaUI.net. And then that will link you to GitHub as well. And there's instructions there. You can We've got .NET templates, so you can just go to the command line, .NET new, Avalonia, it create your
excellent
a project. And a lot of focus on the MVVM pattern is sort of the normal way people use Avalonia.
Yeah, because it's based very closely to how WPF was. It inherits all of that. But it's not, you're not forced to go down that route. It probably works best that way. But there's another kind of group of people that work on F-sharp support for Avalonia.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like Avalonia Funk UI, and they have all the kind of functional programming model for Avalonia. So there's kind of many different ways of actually using it.
Well, and it's interesting, the F-sharp guys have their own thing, right? Like how they want to do things too. So it's cool that they're being successful making Avalonia work for F-sharp, just to make it functional.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've basically thrown away the MVVM part. And honestly, I can't remember what the MV something is that they use, but they've got a different MVU maybe.
MVU. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's model view uppity. It is F sharp. Okay. No, that's not right. here I found it. I'll include a link to the show here, but the sort of funk UI kind of approach. Okay. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting here is just like all these different communities have come in on Avalonia and made things work for themselves.
That's cool. Very cool. So what's next besides continuing to work on the mobile versions? What's next for you? What's in your wheelbox? Wheelbox?
So, yeah, we are currently, we're working on this release that I'm talking about in May is going to be pretty much, it's going to be pretty big. So we're working really hard on this new rendering system for Avalonia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It basically, the way I can describe it is, it gives you the rendering capabilities that UWP brought, kind of composition and animations that run on RenderThread, lighting, shadows.
Nice.
It opens up all of that. It's very similar API to Windows Composition, but cross-platform. And we're also finishing off things like accessibility, IME, so full integration with all the different languages with full rich text input. Mm. Browser support with WASM. These are basically the main things that we're trying to bring in the next release.
Just working your way through the whole stack. Piles of issues here. Like the people are all in on ideas and things they can, things to work on. Like you've certainly got folks that are keen to get new enhancements on it.
Yeah, we get a lot of issues, people requesting things. And obviously we try and encourage the community to get involved and talk to us and try and open pull requests. And a lot of people do.
We've got a ton of contributors. Like you said, there's three of you, but see, holy man, there's a lot of people that have written code from this.
Mm.
Well, in the beginning, there was three of us.
Right.
But now I think there's something like 12 people that are pretty much all the time, like the core developers, the core maintainers, I guess you could call it. But there's over, what, maybe 210? Yeah.
But I recognize the shape of this. Like, I can see the three of you with your thousands of commits. But then you have a big block of hundreds of commits. And that's really exciting. Like, wow. And hopefully they're consumers of Avalonia trying to make Avalonia better. That's a really healthy community. And then it trails off into, you know, people add their thing. Eventually you get to a place where it's just cool to say you had a PR at Avalonia, right? You add that to your resume.
Yeah. And it's very, you can use Avalonia, or you find a missing control or missing feature or bug. It's not too difficult to go and fix it yourself most of the time, because most of the control layers of Avalonia, it's written in the same way that you're writing your application anyway. So you can just go in there, look at the code. It should be familiar. It's only the really like low level stuff, like the rendering systems, that are a bit more complex. But
yeah,
all the way back to 2013. So you're coming up on 10 years since the original check-in.
Yeah.
Congratulations, yeah. Dan. It's an amazing project. Like I said, I'm vaguely embarrassed. We haven't had you on before.
Completely embarrassed.
People need to know about this. This is a great implementation of XAML that lots of people are happy with.
Yeah.
It's like been just an unsung secret, and I'm glad you guys are getting to one. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thank you. Thanks for spending this almost hour with us. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's been really good.
All right. And we'll see you next time on .NET Rocks.
.NET Rocks is brought to you by Franklin's Net and produced by Plop Studios, a full-service audio, video, and post-production facility located physically in New London, Connecticut, and, of course, in the cloud. Online at pwop.com. Visit our website at dotnetrocks.com for RSS feeds, downloads, mobile apps, comments, and access to the full archives going back to show number one, recorded in September 2002. And make sure you check out our sponsors. They keep us in business. Now go write some code. See you next time. Got a transmitter banned by the FCC. Yes, I'm a